We're recording now, Philip. Philip Bryan, that's your full name, isn't it?
Bryan Philip.
I don't think that's right.
I don't either. Not my decision.
I don't think that's right. I think that's something else. Howard Glassman, June 16. You know, a lot of people I've noticed are saying, oh, I can't believe it's June already. Are you one of them?
It's halfway through. I said that to Dahl the other day. My goodness,
June. This is what I mean.
We're halfway through June.
Well, we'll call that halfway through June. Soon we'll all be dead. No.
Then I was watching television the other night, and there was some, I think we were watching a Jays game, and there was some reference to October baseball. Will Jays be playing? And I turned to her and I said, and before you know it, darling, it will be October. This is what I said to her.
Yeah. Yes. Did you? I would love to get a shot. You know, like in movies and TV shows, they have the camera on you and you're talking and they cut to the other person for the reaction back to you. And I can just see, like you saying, oh, you know, soon, darling, it'll be October. And then cut to Dahl and she's just like in her mind, just, you know, praying for the sweet relief of death.
No, I often think about that. She's sort of... You know, she's 65. I'm going to be 65. We live to be 85. That's quite the sentence for her when you think about it.
That's right. She's kind of, she's like
20
in her mind. She's just counting down the days.
Well, it's tough because you only got, say, 20 years to live and you have to live it with me. Hey, believe me, I understand.
Well, listen, you have to go through it too, though.
Oh, my goodness. She's my little charm.
All right, here we go, Phil.
The following episode of Hubble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Dick Sky, The Chambers Plan, Clear Air Solutions, Palma Pasta, Safetech Security, NextHome.ca, DraftKings, Red Light Holland, City Parent, and our newest sponsor, HealthGate, providing digital solutions to improve health outcomes. If you'd like to talk to Hubble and Fred, we have a Patreon account. And now from the remote headquarters of the Hubble and Fred Show, here are Hubble and Fred.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're doing Chamber Plan, Government, and Gig Sky. Write it down. Every day, more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctor's offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. Every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit Ontario.ca/book a vaccine, paid for by the government of Ontario. Phil, I'm going to send you a note. I forgot to tell you this before the show. And one of our sponsors is looking for some stuff, a file, if you will, that we had sent him, but it had expired. So can I send that to you now?
Absolutely.
All right. All right. All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Tony Clement is going to be on the show today, but you just told me before this show started that he thought it was yesterday.
The correspondence that I've been reading, yes.
Okay.
And I do recall, you know, him slotted for Wednesday, so maybe he got his days mixed up. He's a brilliant man. But, you know, we're all capable of little missteps, are we not?
Oh, yeah. My whole life is a misstep. Zigging and zagging. Tim Niblett, the professor. Professor Niblett with the Retirement Sherpa. And Tim Daniels, live from Florence, Italy. He's the man in charge of Health Gauge. Is yours still charging, or have you figured out? Is yours charging? Oh, you got it on? Mm-hmm. Nice. How was your sleep last night? I had a great sleep last night.
Not bad.
What? How many hours? I have 6.7 hours, 1.6 light or heavy, deep, and 5.1 light.
Yeah, I have 7.6.
Wow.
And 2.3 heavy.
Man, that's cool. You're cool.
No, it is. Wearing it yesterday, too, I golfed with a cart. Crazy. You know, you do 18 holes, and I only had... like 5,300 steps on the day.
Yeah.
The day before, I almost had that many just doing stuff around the house.
Yeah.
Yard work and stuff. It really shows you when you walk a golf course. That could be 12 or 13,000 or more, right?
10,000. You know, it's funny because I played 36 holes yesterday in a tournament, and we were in carts all day. And I looked at my watch at the end of the day, and it was around 11,000 steps, even in a cart. Because you're
Why
going.
Why would that be?
Because you're, well, first of all, I played 36 holes, so it's 36 holes of course, running back and forth to the car. But
yeah. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Anyway, I do enjoy walking.
Running back and forth to the car.
Cart.
Cart.
Yeah, I went back to the car.
You're on the fifth. Hold on a second.
I'm going to go back to the car. That's right.
Yeah, that's... and I would figure, you know, on average, obviously, you would walk less steps than I would, even in a cart. You know, I would think.
No, why? Because I'm not looking for as many balls?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I want to talk about some. We're going to get to some emails, and because we haven't done that in a while, I put together some for us. Just a few of our friends, Hundy Peas, and Patreon Hundy Peas, which are like super peas. But there was a real brief conversation, and you and I started talking about something that I found fascinating. Because Dan and I and you were talking before the show, and you asked Dan to do something.
Yeah.
And then when Dan left the conversation, I wanted to ask you some questions about it. And you said, oh, wait, we should do this on the show. Mm. And it started with the phrase, something about, you said, hey, Dan, can you put my shit tag out?
Mm-hmm.
Duh. And then I just was like, what are you guys talking about?
Well, at the park, on the back of your trailer, they affix this little card. It almost looks like a credit card. And, what you do is when you leave, say, on a Sunday night, if it's a weekend, whatever, and you take your card and you deposit it in this box, and then they know that you want a pump out of your black water, which means your poop tank.
Really? Right? That's the trailer euphemism for it, black water?
Yeah, and every year I think you get 12 or 14 for free. After that, I think you pay $10. But they do it on a Wednesday or a Thursday. I'm not sure what day this year. And if you forget to put your poop tag in and then you find out between the Wednesday or Thursday that you're full, then you got to pay extra for them to come up the road and pump you out.
Yeah.
So it becomes a guessing game. It's like, you know, my daughter was up there with the kids. So I'm thinking, okay, so they got there Saturday and then two little kids and them. How much would they poop and pee and how many gallons would that be? And should I have it done today? Because I'm going up today and I don't want to wait another week with what comes out of me. And I don't want to be in a position where I'm full. So these are the things that are considered, and you found this
fascinating. Well, I'll tell you what I found fascinating, because I'm very obsessive about things. Sometimes I'm a little bit too much. And the first question I asked you was, do you remember what it was? I said, is there a gauge?
Yes.
Is there some way that you can go check on an apparatus that says, okay, you're at 40 gallons or there's a level. Yeah. And because that's what I would be checking all the time. I'd be like, okay, how many gallons? Mm-hmm. Then I would be calculating how many people, how many gallons, how many poos, how many peas.
Well, it's the natural thing to do, Howard.
Is it really?
Yeah.
And you said there wasn't, and that gave me, I was like, no, how do you know then? What if you're wrong?
Well, I don't have a gauge on mine. Some do.
What, the fancy ones?
Not so much necessarily. It's just a feature on some, but to my experience and from what I've heard, they're not usually that accurate either, right? Because sometimes things get stuck.
Yeah, I bet.
But I have this thing where I can go and turn the water off in the toilet, then open the flush and put a flashlight down and see what this situation is, right?
Why? Because you can see in the actual toilet,
right into the tank,
because how high up it is.
Yeah, these aren't traditional flush toilets. They're called drop toilets.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so
they suck it down.
No, it doesn't even suck. It just drops.
Oh.
So what happens is you go, and then when you get up, the bowl fills up to about a third or whatever, quarter, and then you go, and then you flush. Everything drops into the holding tank.
So so the other questions I asked you, and you've answered one of them, is if you, let's say you didn't have it pumped out or whatever.
Right.
And then you got up there and you looked in and you sort of concluded that it was too full.
Yes.
Then you can call and have them pump it out. What yes. if, what if, you know, in there's no one around and you're just, yeah. it's too full. Does it start to smell in the trailer?
Oh, no. Two reasons, because they're airtight, especially mine, my model. Like, I have, like, the top-notch toilet. You've seen it. It's a beautiful toilet.
It's wonderful.
Yes. Howard, it's top of the
line. You just want to hang around there.
You just want to stay on it.
That's right.
And it's airtight. And then there's this stuff. These, they're like little pellets. It's called odorless. And the stuff's fantastic. So when I get there.
And you stick those in your bum?
I should. Doll.
Doll.
You can, force some of these.
Doll. Can you put one of these tablets in my tuchus? Tuchus so, tablets.
But this product is fantastic. As soon as I get there, I get like a little scoop and I put it in and then run some water behind it. And there's never, ever an odor. Ever.
All right. Well, again, I found this whole thing fascinating. Mm-hmm. Did you? Yeah. You said there was something. There was another aspect to it. You said we should bring it up. There's another aspect that you might. I might find funny. Was that one of the aspects?
Oh, no, that was it. Okay. Check. All right. I looked down. So that's a little bit of a quandary I'm in this morning. It's the big decision. Should I or shouldn't I? Do I want to waste a pump out or do I want to play safe and go for it? So if I'm a little preoccupied this morning.
No, I can tell. It's,
all right.
It's weighing all heavily right. on your mind.
All right.
Do you know why I'm playing this song, Phil?
It has nothing to do with the flushing, is it?
It does. Fred knows why, but I just wondered if a young man like you would get the reference. It's Black Water, my friend. Black Water. All right. The last few weeks, it's been a while since we've taken a few minutes and, you know, talked about our Patreon people. And it's time for emails.
Email. Hi guys.
Hi guys.
Hi guys. What's Harapipa?
Hi guys. And it's not. And I want to say this to start with. It's not like the Patreon support that we get has. It's not the novelty's worn off. But I mean, we don't check it as much. And I haven't been as on top of sending notes and putting what's on the show. Because I'll be honest with you, it's golf season. So, Fred, why don't you lead us off? And now, I've sent you two or three different emails. So the first one that you should see is the one that says Mike Schuster. Yes, hi, fellas. Okay, I do. There you go.
Yes. Hi, fellas.
Hi, fellas.
This is from Mike Schuster. Just a quick FYI with respect to mix and match vaccines for those that would like to travel outside of Canada again. It will be up to each country to determine if a person is fully vaccinated before they enter. There is a concern that countries other than Canada may look at someone with an AstraZeneca dose 1 and Pfizer dose 2 as being half vaxxed twice and not allow them in. Oh.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So if you mix them, you might be half that. Those that would like to travel who have Astra dose 1 may want to consider sticking to Astra to avoid this problem. This is Delise is being, her second shot is Friday, and this is the situation she's in, trying to decide, is she going to stick with Astra?
And by the way,
read this.
Same with Rachel. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to bring this up mainly for this discussion because we've been talking about what are the efficacies, can you mix and match, why at first did they say you couldn't and now you can, and a lot of those a lot of those questions that have come up have to do, as we said the other day, with research and science. And you know, when this all began, they weren't really sure if the effects would be worse or better. But I think Rachel, who is in a similar category of Dahl, has said the other day that she's not going to worry about whether she mixes and matches it or not. So, I don't know. I think some people are.
This from Mike Schuster, this is food for thought, though. If that could cause you problems internationally,
Because, you know, I would hate to land, say, in Italy with my little suite, and she has to turn around and fly home while I, you know, head to a bistro.
Yeah.
That would be quite a dilemma.
I bet. Mm-hmm. I'm sure when as soon as somebody sees you, they put their shit tag out, and they go, okay, we're gonna need a pump out. Well, thank you, Mike Schuster.
Thank you, Michael.
Mike, all right, hang on a second. I got this sound effect up. Hold on. Here we go.
Hi, guys.
This one's from Mike Sedich. Good morning, fellas. It was 4 years ago today when you guys held the fundraiser for Johnny Slapshot. My wife and I had a great time at the Georgetown Golf Club. You should hold another one when things go back to normal. By the way, there's no way I could ever remember this date on my own. I can barely remember my way home. Apple dates are great. Thanks for all the years of entertainment. Keep it up. I didn't send you the picture of yourself, Frederick, myself, Howard, and Mike together in this attachment, but I thought it was interesting that the whole point of his note is that Apple dates reminded him that it was on this date, but it was nowhere near this date. It wasn't in June. It was in the fall.
It was November, wasn't it?
I could go down and look. I didn't, but...
I think it was November 2nd or something.
But it's funny. And Mike, thank you so much for, you know, first of all, it was great having you there, and it's a great picture of the three of us. I just thought it was kind of funny because I'm the same way, Mike. I wouldn't remember either if it wasn't for some calendars and such. But I just love it. He says, Apple dates are great, but apparently not for this one.
Mm-hmm. You know, the reason I remember that is because my daughter, Melanie, she took one of the posters and had it framed. Remember, we signed it, and then she framed it, and it's in his bedroom.
Yes.
And it's quite a keepsake because, you know, there's this poster, and that's actually him. It's about him, so to speak. You know what I mean?
No, for sure.
That's him. And it's great. You know those little stickers somebody gave us, too? It has our faces on it. Just says humbleandfredradio.com.
Sure.
Well, one day, you know, I noticed their computers when they were at school one day, you know, their homeschooling. I noticed their computers had a bunch of stickers on them. So I had a couple in the car. So I whipped out and I put them on the computer without them knowing. And then I'm thinking, oh, should I have done that? Maybe I shouldn't have done that because maybe their own stickers and it's a kid thing. You know how thrilled they were to have Papa and Howard on the computer? They just love it. And when I go to their tape, especially May, look, Papa. I still have you on my computer.
Oh.
It's very cute.
Nice
story, eh? Do you like that story?
Every part of it.
That
you could, in fact, you know how much I like that story?
Mm-hmm.
You could
tell it again?
No, I was going to say, you tell it again, and then wait while Phil and I hum softly in the background. Okay, Phil, here we go. Amazing Grace. Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, come on. I'm not telling
that. No, we have the poster down in the office, in the Phil office. And I don't know a lot, but I know it wasn't, you know, on this day in June. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to Craig Campbell. Craig says, hi, guys.
Just a suggestion. Could Tim, this being Niblet, I'm sure, lower his snowball mic? It rather dominates his face, masking all the visual facial cues, sort of like Wilson from Home Improvement.
I'm
pretty sure it would work equally well from neck height. All right.
Well, if Tim's listening, you know, I like the idea that this guy thinks that Tim's like, you know, the Home Improvement guy who just, you never saw his face, just his eyes over the fence on the television show.
Not so sure there, Tim.
I don't know if I ever watched an episode of that. Weird, eh? That was a huge show, right? Home Improvement.
Tim Allen. I was a fan of his stand-up, and that whole thing came from his stand-up. So I think I watched a little bit. It was never a regular, but I know the premise. Here we go.
Hi, guys.
This one's from Jeff Kilborn. And he says, you guys should position the show as a springboard for other podcasters. There's Tim Niblett now. Position the show. Most of the podcasts I listen to are from guys I heard on your show. McCowan, Clement, Ben Murgi, Plagakis. You should also check in with Blundell again to see if he's ready to do your show. I actually listened to Dean's podcast. Still not a huge fan of his, but he has definitely matured from his days on the edge. So there you go. Thank you, Jeff Kilborn.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. I haven't... I'm trying to think if I've listened to Dean recently, but, you know, I know you have. And he's... Is he doing it on the regular now? It was seemed to be sporadic before, but I'm not sure if he is doing it every day or...
I don't know.
Okay.
All I know is having... All I know is... The blog that he does, if you call it, I guess you would call it a blog.
I don't know what they call it anymore.
Or it's, would you call that a blog nowadays? Anyway, but remember back in when I was unemployed back in the mid-2000s, cutting edge, when I had my blog, Canadian Thinker, it's a lot of work. Yeah. It's a lot of work because the thing is you always feel like you're in a position where you got to update it. And that's one thing I notice about Dean's blog. I mean, it's updated every day, maybe two or three times a day. It's like a full-time job.
Yeah.
And I can see from the, you know, the signature or whatever you want to call it. I mean, he does a lot of it. It's quite the commitment.
Well, and you know what?
And I know where that comes from.
And kudos to him, because a lot of people start off with these things with great intentions. Oh, I'm going to do a thing and it's going to be on every day. And a few days in or a few weeks in, you go, ah, this is a lot more work than I thought. Before we get to Niblet, let's just... just quickly, I want to acknowledge this Chris K, who commented on our Patreon account. Freddie, why don't you read that?
Chris K, Columbus Blue Jackets fan.
Yes.
Unrelated note, I miss the regular Patreon announcements, gentlemen, even if one per week. It would be great to see, and then it's cut off, I'm sorry.
It would be great to see or have. Keep up the great work. Thank you. Mike.
Okay. Yes, in fact, we should have another Patreon party.
Yes, sir.
I think. Mm-hmm. Find something to raffle off.
You know, that's a great idea. And we can do it because you can be at the trailer. Maybe we'll have a Humble and Fred Patreon summer, you know, super party or whatever.
Campfire.
Campfire. Why don't we do that?
And maybe we could auction off a picture of Timmy without the snowball in front of his face.
Yeah, maybe.
Look at him.
Look at that beauty. Mm-hmm. Look at that beautiful man. He is a, well, he's a bright light in a dark world. That's what he is. Tim Niblett is our contributing financial expert in terms of retirement and all things Sherpa-like. Yes, I'm going to get to the email here. He has is an investment advisor, Raymond James, a member of the Canadian people that
Investors Protection.
Thank you, sir. Please welcome to our program once again, Timothy Niblett. Hi, Nibbies.
Good morning, everybody. I'm super happy that one person would like to see a little more of me. So that started my day off very nicely.
Mm-hmm. Well, that really was a compliment. That was somebody saying, I want to see more. Although I thought it was interesting that he equated you to Wilson from Home Improvement. You only saw the guy's eyes. How are you, sir? The last time I saw you, I was in my zone. I was tight-lipped, but I hope friendly. I was trying to be engaging without getting into what was going on.
Yes, well, I actually had a 69 on Monday myself. I was just dyslexic, and it was 96. So,
kind of thing. Yeah. I thought you were going to do that. I was going to tell you, since Saturday, I've had a bunch of golf guys say, hey, congratulations. Oh, this is my favorite number. I'm like, all right. But I saw
but
Tim.
But a 20-foot putt to do it, too. That's impressive.
Well, that's after I gagged it up all the way down the ninth hole. It was like bad drive, bad second shot, not a great chip. And I was like, oh, well, that was my chance. I'll just try and get this close. And I saw it go in, and I was like, oh, thank you, golf. But I saw Tim in between the front nine and the back nine, and he was just finishing up his day. And I saw Tim, and I was like, hey, Tim. And you and I kind of exchanged some pleasantries, but I didn't want to, like, not only didn't want to get into a long conversation. I was just kind of like in this sort of, you know, kind of going forward. And you said, how's it going? And I said, pretty good. Because I just didn't want to stop and go, hey, Tim, I'm 2 under par. It's exciting. But, and then I sent you a note after saying, oh, that's why I didn't stop.
Too bad you couldn't make the U.S. Open qualifying. We maybe be watching you this weekend there.
No, thanks. No. But Tim, no, it was exciting.
Tim, what is the best score you've ever achieved?
When I was a junior, I was 74. I remember that. That was a long time ago.
A long time ago when you were a junior?
Down in Florida this year, but it's a much easier course.
Well, I'm sorry, what was the score in Florida?
What did you do in Florida?
A couple of 81s, but a much easier course. Like the ratings probably, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 less than.
No, it doesn't matter what the rating is.
Anyhow, you still got to put the puck in the net, as Howard told me there.
That's right. You still got to put the ball in the hole sometime.
You know, I was telling Howard I played yesterday at a place called Rebel Creek in a par 3. I put it like 2 feet from the pin and got a birdie, which rarely happens to me, obviously. But the exhilaration you feel from that, I can only imagine what it's like to put a whole wonderful round together. I would love to experience that one day. You know?
Well, yeah, like go ahead, Tim.
A beginning to end like round, like the whole thing makes you feel that way. Ugh.
I was going to say, yes, Fred, you and I can only imagine.
Well,
come on.
Now, you know, it's funny you say that because whether it's shooting 81 in Florida or 74 as a junior or Fred's best score, I think last year or 2 years ago, you shot 90 something or 89. I can't remember what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, the funny thing is, if you had watched me play Saturday, you would have seen me hit 6 or 7 shots that weren't all that great. They were fine. They just weren't all amazing. I hit 6 or 7 shots that were, that I hit one, you know, I had a par 3 where I hit it really close. I had another one that, you know, the putt went in. But what I've said to Tim and other golf nerds is that really most rounds are just kind of some really good ones, some not so good ones, some terrible ones. But what happened Saturday is I just didn't have any shot that left me in a position where I couldn't, you know, play on and hit the next shot. To your point, though, Fred, not it, from beginning to end, it wasn't all just mind-blowing amazing. Like I say, I hit a terrible tee shot on the last hole. I hit not a very good second shot, not a great chip. Like it was definitely getting away from me. And that's what most rounds are like. It just happened to be that day, I only made a few mistakes and none of them cost me, you know, any big numbers. That's all it is.
Yeah, even when you're like 150 yards out or something and you hit it and it, you know, and it lands just before the green, then skips on and rolls towards the pin. It's a weird feeling, like, wow, that's how the big boy, that's how adults play. Like, yeah. Wow. And it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, again, it's that thing that keeps you coming back thinking, boy, if I can do it once, can I do that more? Yeah,
that's how golf sucks, yeah. Of course, my first,
it does.
When Fred told me you played yesterday, Tim, my first question was, how many people did you hit into this time?
Only 4.
Anyways, listen, Nibs, let's get to some numbers. You know, the subject of today's discussion, retirement income, and I think this is a good one. How much should you take? So what are the criteria, and what are some of the things you talk about with your clients?
Yeah, it's something I've been doing a lot of. Well, I do it a lot all the time, but even just yesterday, I think I had 2 or 3 in a row where we were kind of nitty-grittying it. Mackenzie Financial used to call it the burn rate, right? Like, how much are you spending? How much are you going through? Back to Dan Shulman and actuaries. An actuary would tell you you could spend about 4% of your money and it would never run out, you know, taking inflation into account and all. Of course, it's different for each situation. One of the big things is longevity. How the heck long are you going to need it for, right? That's an important factor. How long will you be active enough to maybe go to Italy to a bistro and all that sort of stuff? There's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. So what do you do? Like, where do you begin?
Well, you have to have a Sherpa on your side, Fred, of course. I mean, that's the beginning. You know, like anything, it's just a good old boring analysis, right? You do the projections, how much you got, what do you think's realistic for inflation? One thing, we've got a really cool program that does this stuff and really takes taxation into account. And, you know, as an example, people in retirement might want to spend more the first 10 years because they feel that they'll be able to be more active. They'll be able to go out and about and spend some more money. Now, maybe the flip side later on in life, they'll have to spend more on health costs. So we have to take that into account too. But hey, it's your money. It can be your plan. You might want to give some stuff to the kids while you're still alive.
No, that's not going to happen. I have a question. It's not on your note here, but I'm just wondering, have you ever run into a situation where you know, somebody is, you know, they're into, you know, their early retirement, they're in their mid-60s, late-60s, and you have to sit them down and say, hey, you're spending too much at this rate. You're going to run out.
Yeah, yeah. It does happen more the other way around.
Well, right? You're not spending enough?
When we've got that nice kind of sum on our statement, and that's different for everybody, but... it just gives you that confidence, that security and all. But yeah, I've definitely had a few that I'm like, hey, by the way, you know, if we keep this up, it ain't going to last forever.
Right? Unless you're planning to check out at 74.
Yeah, I'll do a simple projection and show them the money sort of thing.
Right.
So yeah, that's part of the council, right? You just have to bring reality into the situation sometimes.
And when you say it's more often the other way, I can see that, because even if you have a nice nest egg and you're used to, over your life, every couple of weeks or once a month, money being dropped into your account from your employer, your business or whatever, and all of a sudden that stops, and my only means of income are what's in that nest egg.
Yeah.
That's an adjustment, but I can see how a few people would. I can see how generally people might freak out a bit and be deathly afraid that they're going to run out.
Be nervous
even in case, even when there's, you know, the cases where there's no chance of that happening. You know.
Well, you've gone from abundance mode, arguably, right? As you're accumulating, as you're working, as it's getting bigger, and now you've shifted somewhat to scarcity mode, where you're not getting more money coming in, where you're taking it out, where you're uncertain how long you're going to last for. I was talking with a client about this yesterday. I mean, all's rosy right now, but at some point in time, we'll go backwards for a little bit. And if they choose that to be the same year they want to help the kids out with buying a house, and they're taking their income out, and you kind of got the triple whammy, things can change, you know, if you're not vigilant.
Well, that's why I asked, because, you know, different personality types, I'm sure, as part of what Tim provides is not only in financial counseling, but also sort of a perspective on the retirement process in general. I think a lot of people, you know, at first, to what Fred said, you're so used to having money coming in. All of a sudden, now you're using the money you've saved over a lifetime. And I can see, I certainly being a little bit nervous about that, not wanting to run out. I mean, that's part of the game, is if you retire at 65, your chances of living to 85 or about whatever. So you're going to 20 years of this money, and you have to counsel them that this amount will be okay, I imagine.
Now, thankfully, here in the GTA, and a number of people have done it, not just the GTA, but, you know, house prices and home equity and all, like Vancouver, wherever, have done very, very well. We do always have that safety valve for a lot of people where they've got the equity in the home there. So, you know, they could tap into it, and they don't have to Sherpa size and move to a smaller place and unlock the principal that way, but they can tap into it. And that's a great resource and a great source of comfort for people too.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, one thing that's always bewildered me a bit is when I'm reading about retirement, they're saying you should have between 70 and 75% of your income, you know, you plan on that for your retirement. Well, that is so wide ranging. Somebody that makes 100 grand, that's 75,000. Somebody that makes a million a year, that's 750. I mean, to me, that's so wide. Would you deal in a formula like that? Because I don't care like how rich you are, what your lifestyle is. When you get to be in your 60s and 70s, how would you spend 700 grand a year? I mean, maybe I'm being naive. You know, if that's
well, you could get a fancy tank. You could get a fancy,
I guess,
poop tank for your trailer. One that could tell you how much you need. Anyway, Tim, please answer the question.
Well, he's already got the airtight seal, so there's only so far to go with this here. Yeah, we don't usually do it that way. We'll do the projections for people and kind of zero it out unless they want to leave a legacy. So based on longevity.
Right.
And I find it's best to kind of say, okay, in today's dollars, adjusted for inflation, you're going to have $6,000 every month after tax. And that seems to be a lot easier for people to understand. But I'd say the percentage probably works a bit, because if you're used to making $1 million a year, you're used to spending a heck of a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was thinking when you said that, Fred. It's easy for us to say that. But if your lifestyle was this much, doesn't matter if it's a lot, because you're used to spending it.
An accountant once told me, he said to me, because we were talking along these lines, and he said, you know, I have some clients that make $700, a couple of lawyers make $750,000 a year and don't have a pot to piss in, as he put it. It just goes to show you.
Well, we had Fred and I, the same accountant for a long time, probably the same guy who said to me, he said, it's funny because we were talking RSPs one year, and he said, there's a lot of guys who make what you make that don't have any money left to put into an RSP at the end of the year. Anyway, I know we're getting away from kind of what you, well, we began by what you wanted to talk about, but these are a couple questions. One last one that's not on here that I just heard the other day, some guys talking about a number percentage wise that you're supposed to like want to die with, right? Like the idea is when you're dead, you just said you zero it out, but is there sort of like you want to have, you want to die with 20% of your retirement income left? Is there a number around that?
I'd like to die with 0% left, Howard, personally.
Yeah, I know. But are you saying like you, so you recommend that you just zero it out, that you say, I'm going to project to die at 84, 85. And at that point, the girls can fend for themselves.
Well, it's back to that goal thing, right? I mean, some people might want to have a legacy left behind, too. Some might say, perfect world, I'd like to have $200,000 to move on to the SPCA or whatever is important to them, to family, that sort of thing. Certainly, if we're using 85 as an example, I wouldn't want to zero somebody out then because they would hopefully still be kicking and need more money, right?
Right. Now, I was just laughing at myself because as soon as I said that, I thought it would be funny if your phone, vibrated and it's Spencer saying, don't you dare let him die. Don't you dare let him die with nothing.
But in a lot of cases, right, at the end, even if you exhaust your nest egg, so to speak, there's property considerations. The kids usually end up with a chunk of real estate or the assets from that in a lot of cases, hopefully.
Right, absolutely. And it's always funny, you know, you mentioned the lawyers as an example. There's always surprises, right? You know, there's people that you would perceive, and usually what do? We look at the car they drive, maybe the house they live in, that don't have much wealth past the obvious by the external. And I remember once a client's father who was a postal worker in the Maritimes, and he was getting an inheritance, and you would just perceive, right or wrong, that, you know, it wouldn't be that much. Well, this was a decade or two ago, and it was over $1 million. You just never know.
Yeah. Well, listen, my friend, I hope that we covered some of what you wanted to talk about. I think it was fascinating. Again, those are a lot of questions that people have. If you have questions about any of this or anything you're wondering about, what a great guy to bounce it off of, even if it's just a second opinion. We've said this a bunch of times in the years that a lot of times Tim will just take a look at what you got, and if it's fine, he'll tell you. Tim.Niblett@RaymondJames.ca. He does what he can. There's his beautiful face. No snowball getting in the way of that map this morning. Nibbles, thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Timmy.
My pleasure as always. Enjoy and profit, you guys, and hopefully we'll all be on a golf course. Maybe Phil can be our fourth.
Oh, yes. Phil could be. You know what? He could caddy for all three of us. Running around making sure that the balls are clean.
I'd like to see Phil reading a green. He's so analytical. Exactly. That would be a lot of fun.
I'd like
to. My only apprehension is I'm so used to being the low score on, or the high score on the card. If he beat me, it would be humiliating because he's never golfed before. And that could happen.
Oh, yeah, it could happen. All right, Timmy. Thanks, man. I'll see you later. Boom, 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 boom. Fred, man, what about the government? Do they want us to get vaccinated or are they finished with that?
Yes, they do, Howard. And, very encouraging yesterday. I think there were under 300 cases, which is just makes you feel good when you hear that news, doesn't it?
Yeah, tell me, because I asked Rachel at the end of the day, I said, what were, just for some, funny you bring it up, because I was like, what were the cases today? Where are we at? And it's 300 for Ontario.
Yeah, I think it was 2-something yesterday.
That's amazing.
And every day it's just getting better, and every day more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors, offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. And every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit Ontario.ca/bookvaccine, paid for by the government of Ontario. And quickly, you know, I've talked about the frustrations of watching sports from the United States and seeing how you know, they seem to be back to normal. The Jays game last night from Buffalo, unbelievable. I mean, just an hour and a bit away.
Yeah.
That little Salem Field, you know, looked full to me. And the aggravating part was most of the fans in that stadium, a Jays home game, were cheering for the Yankees. They're booing the Blue Jays.
Well, they would be Yankee fans in Buffalo. I get that. But it is weird.
Makes sense. And it just added to the frustration. I'm thinking, get these guys in the Rogers Center. They're all vaccinated. Figure something out.
No, I know. And you know what? I can tell you the restrictions were different last fall when I played in this tournament. They held it in the fall because of COVID. But we were more open last fall than we were yesterday. Yesterday, we weren't. No one was allowed to gather inside the clubhouse. The little in-between meal was served outside. And it is encouraging that our case counts are, you know, plummeting, and hopefully they stay that way. Todd Shapiro, as you know, has evolved into this champion of truffles. Truffle champion Todd Shapiro, the CEO of a company with a market cap of over $100 million. That company is Red Light Holland, a publicly traded company on the CSE. Their ticker symbol is TRIP. They make no claims medically, but they do want to be part of positive change. People support RLH, Red Light Holland, as they sell clothing around the world at imicrodose.ca. In the Netherlands, if you're there, you can actually order some of their brands, their own brand of iMicrodose packs that are sold online. And they're available at imicrodose.nl. So, you know, speaking of vaccinations, it seems I mentioned to you a couple days ago, or it could have been last week, most people I know have been at least single dose vaccinated. And now it's starting to become more and more second dose people. You said Doll's getting hers. I still think there's some people out there that are not going to be vaccinated, and and some of the legalese and some of the, like, the cruise ships and all that stuff's going to go on. That stuff's going to go on for some time.
What I like is what was in that email this morning, that, you know, forget Canada having a vaccine passport. Maybe Canada, ultimately you won't, but a lot of countries you want to visit will have it. So deal with it. And the thing is, you can bitch and complain in Canada and whine about your rights. Fine. But try and fly into a country, say like Italy or somewhere. Do they think they care what you think, a Canadian, without a vaccine passport? And that's the way it should be. Everybody's got to look after their borders. And I so want it to come to that. That, you know, you're planning a trip to Italy and then you find out, oh, you know, I didn't want to get a vaccine. But now I can't go to Italy.
Yeah,
I think that's fabulous.
And
you don't want that to happen.
I agree. And you watch. You watch how fast people's stand on vaccination will change when they can't go on the trip they want to go on. Phil, yes.
It's already happening in France now.
What you say,
Phil? If you are fully vaccinated right now, you can now go to France. And if you're not vaccinated, they will bar you. This is the French embassy saying this right now.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, a lot of people, and we know a couple that are staunch anti-vaxxers. Well, they're stuck. And you know what?
You can't go.
More and more. And I don't just think about it in terms of travel. I think about it in terms of concerts and shows and things you want to go to and restaurants you might want to go to that will say, yeah, we're not really into the non-vaccinated human being right now.
But you know what I can smell from a mile away? Black market vaccine passports or documentation. That's going to be a thing.
Yeah, maybe.
And there should be severe penalties for that, because that's fraud.
Yeah.
That's misrepresentation. That's putting other people at risk if it comes to that.
It's bullshit.
Bullshit.
And again, I can't prove this, but there's going to be a lot of people that were, you know, standing on their principles and all the internet and the magnetized vaccines that are going to be like, geez, I really want to go to the south of France. I guess I should just take the fucking vaccine.
Yeah. Then we'll see, because it takes a good measure of selfishness to be an anti-vaxxer and not get it, and then that'll be interesting because, you know, I do want to travel to this destination.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to sort of, you know, give myself a treat. So, yeah, I'll compromise now because I want, you know, I want to and I want to end up in a place that I want to go. So,
well, you know, human beings are like, it's all about our self-interest.
Exactly. This is what I was trying to explain.
We're just selfish. Ultimately, we're selfish and we and, you know, I was going to say I don't fault them. I understand that a lot of people are anti-vax because they're scared or they're unsure. And they're, you know, there's a legitimate, like you could have a legitimate conversation with somebody if they weren't down the QAnon rabbit hole about magnets and shit. You can say, listen, I get it. This is all brand new territory. But if you really think that Bill Gates is putting tracking devices into a vaccination, and so, and the 5G network, if you really think that, then we can't have a conversation. But if you're legitimately nervous about it, you know, I get that. It's new and it's unsettling.
This conversation the other day, I had my truck in Georgetown to be serviced. And I was talking to the service advisor guy and a mechanic came out and he started having a conversation with the service advisor. He was asking him that they were doing mass shots at the Geller Center or something in Georgetown. And he was nervous. And he said to the guy, he said, you know, I have this phobia about getting a needle. And then I get into the conversation. I said, well, you don't want a vaccine? He said, I want the vaccine. He said, I just have, since I was a kid, I've had this phobia about getting a needle.
Legitimate conversation.
Yeah, and you know, and it was genuine. I thought, bah, is he just an anti-vaxxer and that's his excuse? But no, I could just tell the way the guy was telling the story about being afraid of a needle as a kid. And I thought, what segment of the population is? And you can't paint them with the same brush you can the selfish people, right?
Well, this is exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, you can have, and there, to answer your question, there's probably some people that don't like needles. There's probably some people that have had bad reactions to the flu shot. There's a myriad of conversations to be had. Mm-hmm. Again, that don't include the 5G fucking magnet problem, and that, because I don't want to have that conversation,
right?
But I get reticence, I get vaccine hesitancy, because, you know, a year ago on the 16th of June 2020 we didn't have a vaccine and now we do. So I mean, again, not having, having faked my way through science until grade 10, I don't know how they were able to come up with it, but they were. Because what's getting back to the beginning of this conversation, look at the case counts. So it must work. It's not a coincidence. You know what I mean? The vaccine must work on some level because we don't have as many cases.
So I said to this guy the other day, I said, you know, I get it. I said, when I got my shot, I looked away. And I said, when I have to give blood or do a blood test or whatever, I said, I can never look. I look away. And he said, oh, man, he said that, you know, he said, I would do that. It's just going and sitting in the chair in that the moments just before. Yeah. He said, it freaks me out. And I thought, wow. And this kid had to be 35, 36 years old.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm like, give me the, I'm the pharmacist. Let me do it. Yeah. Let me do it. I'll do it. This is interesting. This has come up and this is unbeknownst to Fred. This, what I'm about to read you, has come up about a dozen times in my life in the last 2 weeks where people say, hey, I was watching television and I saw Fred. And I'm like, what? And I thought at first it was the commercial that you had done for that.
No.
What was that company?
Brock Windows and Doors.
Holy shit. Who's that guy? Oh, that's Clement. Hang on, Tony. But what it actually was is Debbie Lynch said, hey, I was watching the news live last night and caught Fred's appearance in the Ontario vaccine commercial. Good show. Looking good. Even saw the Humble and Fred mention. And I guess what that was the thing for Brampton.
Yes. Oh. Yours was too blurry.
Yeah. Do you mean the one that I did four times?
Yes.
Four?
I know.
It's just unbelievable. I saw that. I'm like, you know, oh, what, okay.
It's no, you know what it was, though?
I know. It was me.
Your phone. No.
It doesn't want me on the thing.
No, that phone you have,
yeah,
which is a little beat up. I think that was the problem. Because he said to me, he said, why is Howard's? He said, it's just the clarity's not there for... I said, and believe my clip was like 4 seconds.
But it's funny how many people, jokes aside, how many people I have have run into said, hey, they saw Freddie on the... And again, first couple of times it happened, I thought, oh, is that weird commercial still running again for the Doors?
I thought that was just for Brampton, though. I didn't know it was going on TV.
No.
I could have... Oh, I'm sitting in front of the Tin Palace and my hair is on my shoulders. I look a bit ragged, but... Oh. Yeah.
Speaking of looking a bit ragged, what's going on up north? Jesus. You know, I got to tell you, and this is a compliment, Tony looks so much like my father in terms of the, not just in the hairstyle. When my dad, in the 70s, when things started to relax, I remember my father and his peer group growing the sideburns, and the little bit longer look. You know, if you were wearing a leisure suit right now, you could be working at Ideal Menswear. Welcome back to our program. Formerly the assistant to the regional director of this country. He was Minister of Health, so he knows some shit. It's Tony Clement, also the host of an award-winning podcast called...
And Another Thing Podcast.
And Another Thing Podcast, which is doing great guns on all the...
And I'm still on terrestrial radio, guys.
Oh, are you?
Good for you.
Good for you. What radio are you on, Tone?
I'm on Hunter's Bay Radio in Muskoka, Canada for Tony's Rockin' Shindig every month.
Wow.
What?
Yeah,
really.
A rockin' shindig.
Yeah, I'm a DJ.
He does it all.
It's not a political thing. You're actually spinning the wax or whatever they say.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Whatever the young people are saying these days. Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, I'm going up north a couple times in the next couple of months. Do you have any pull up there with any boat rentals? Because renting a boat in the Muskokas is like, I don't know, one of the most expensive. It's so expensive. You know, you can rent an airplane for cheaper than you can rent a boat in the Muskokas. I'm not even kidding you. A twin engine Seneca is about $375 for an hour. An outrider of some, you know, whatever, it's like $700 for the day.
Oh, it's crazy. Prices are crazy for as you've talked about on this on your show, for cottage rentals has been everything to do with outdoor activities, just nuts this year. And I expect it'll continue throughout the summer. I know, Howard, this is of no concern of yours, but even green fees at golf courses are a little bit higher.
Are they really?
Are they really?
Howard, that makes sense, though.
Yeah. Howard, I was going to say you. No, I'm not going to say it.
What?
No.
Say it.
I was going to say, you could have asked Kevin O'Leary to borrow his boat, but it's in the shop.
There you go. Don't ever not say it. Don't ever not say that.
But it's in the shop.
Yeah, it's not working like it used to.
Sorry, Tony. I shouldn't drag you into this.
Tony doesn't want to be part of these kind of discussions.
It's very sad. Like Linda, of course, his wife. I went to university. She was in my class at undergrad. So I've
see. There you go. You brought up a sore spot.
It is sad. Yeah, just shows you. And you know, in the blink of an eye, what can happen?
Tony Clement. For you people who don't know, he served in government both provincially and federally, and has a perspective that none of us have. He's a, you know, you talk about a man in the room. So I want to start with the G7 and go backwards. There's a couple of things politically I want to mention. But I was listening yesterday on my way home from another golf tournament where they were very impressed, it seems, the press, with Biden's performance on this trip. Now, of course, they mentioned nothing about Trudeau. But I'm just wondering, from your perspective, do you see a change, a shift in the you know, sort of political landscape, Biden v. Trump, and how does that, is that a benefit for Canada?
Yeah, I know, obviously, the G7s with Trump were always high drama. Trump didn't get along. He didn't like Angela Merkel, who was the, you know, long-serving chancellor of Germany.
Well, yeah, because she's not his type. That's why he didn't like her.
possibly that. And also, he always had a bee in his bonnet about, and this is something that Obama had said and George W. Bush had said, but for Trump, it was really big about whether these other Western nations were contributing to you know, the cost of the military and military bases. Mm-hmm. And so whereas Obama would kind of raise it and sort of try to be diplomatic about it, there was not a diplomatic bone in Trump's body. And so it became a flashpoint. So these things were basically six against one when Trump was president at every G7, which Trump, I think he ended up not going to the last one, mm-hmm. or something. So yes, very, very changed situation now with Biden, a lot more where they are finding ways to agree on things. And the other thing that's happened, and Trump was at this too, but the concern about China, the People's Republic of China, is now front and center. Trump had raised these issues, but now everyone is of the same view that China is acting very aggressively on multiple fronts, diplomatic, political, military, economic, and so that there has to be a meeting of minds amongst the G7 nations to deal with that.
That's the frustrating thing, and not to defend Donald Trump, but, you know, we said it, I said it, so... You know, if he'd have just been a little fluffier around the edges, you know, he could have saved himself and the world a lot of grief because, you know, you just mentioned it, you know, standing up for who's contributing, who's paying, some of these matters of principle that were legitimate. Why did he have to be such a dick about it, though? You know, that it's and
I'm sorry, Tony, what was that?
It's one of the great mysteries. Why did he have to be such a dick about it?
Well, and Noel Kassler, who we had on last week, said, you know, it's the narcissism that came out in him. He had to be the big man in the room. And there was other ways. And it's, I'm not going to say it was too bad, but for a guy that thought he was so smart, he was pretty effing stupid.
Well,
but,
I think you answered your own question. Why did he have to be such a dick about it? It's because he's been a dick about everything his entire life. But that does. But I get your point that some of the concerns raised during his presidency were legitimate in spite of him, you know, being a numbnut. By the way, I forgot again, but not anymore, ladies and gentlemen. Hang on. Tony Clement, today's Gigs Guy, guest of the day. All right, so there you go.
What do I win?
Well, you win an appearance.
A mattress.
The Humble and Fred Show. What about, so the G7 goes on. Everyone's seems to be impressed with Joe Biden, who has spent a long, you know, people forget how much traveling he did as vice president, how he was in a job where he traveled the world for years and is very comfortable in that genre. But of course, you know, we don't hear much about our presence at this conference. How did we show up?
Well, first thing I'd like to say is Canada being at the G7, you know, it's a point of pride for Canadian diplomats and the political class. But the only reason we were ever at the G7 was because the Europeans wanted Italy there. This is, you know, 30, 35 years ago. And so the Americans said, well, if you're going to have Italy there, we want Canada there. Otherwise, there's too many Europeans. Mm. So we kind of got walked backwards into the G7 in the first place.
Well, it's like with some guy bringing his little brother to the dance.
Yeah, exactly. And so we listen, we're there and we should make the most of it. Absolutely. The Sherpas, those are the people that are helping the prime minister guide them to the summit of the G7. The Canadian Sherpas were trying to do these talking points about how with Angela Merkel retiring as Chancellor of Germany, Trudeau is now the dean of the G7. And Bloomberg did a piece on this, and basically the consensus around the world is no, he's not. You know, Biden has been around for 30, 35 years, as you just mentioned, Howard. So, and he knows all of these people. He knows all of the major politicians of the senior Western countries. And so for him, it's, you know, back to normal because he's used to that.
Yeah.
Trudeau, I think the Bloomberg piece made the point that the first G7 that Trudeau attended after his election in 2015, he was mobbed by international reporters, the new guy on the block, this sexy new Canadian prime minister. At this G7 in Cornwall, UK, no one paid attention to him. So, you know, listen, Trudeau's magnetism can take you mm-hmm. you know, at some distance, but at some point, it's the policies that you're promoting, it's the gravitas of what you bring to the table that matters as well.
Right. The residential schools, that has exploded on the scene again. I mean, that's one aspect of it. You know, and Howard mentioned you're, as a guy in the room, you were a guy in the room. It doesn't matter what government over the past several decades, pushing a century, we can't seem to get anything done with our indigenous people. Like, you know, and Trudeau, when he ran, you know, the stuff with the Gord Downie, it was going to be different. Nothing has changed. There's still dirty drinking water. How is that, Tony? Like, in discussions in Ottawa, when they say, you know, up there on so-and-so reserve, there's still dirty drinking water. Why aren't they there the next day digging wells? Like, I don't get it. Like, how does this perpetuate? How does this never move forward, regardless of the government?
Yeah, it's so frustrating. I mean, Freddie, I was sitting 5 feet away from Prime Minister Harper when he did the public apology on the residential schools in the House of Commons. It was a moment of great drama and importance that in turn begat the Truth and Reconciliation Commission with its 94 recommendations. It's perpetually frustrating because I do believe that, you know, politicians have the best of intentions, but they just can't seem to move the dial on this. I'll tell you the best, as he was called then, the best Indian Affairs minister we ever had was the late Jim Prentice. I went to cabinet meetings with him, obviously, when he was Indian Affairs minister. Every cabinet meeting, he brought forward another treaty that was being resolved, the issues that were that he was resolving. Every week, I actually went to Jim and said, Jim, like, we spend 40% of our cabinet time on Indigenous issues because you keep bringing us stuff to resolve. And then we do resolve them and we move on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And we've never had an Indian Affairs minister like that before who actually got stuff done. And so it's a real problem with the political class not getting a handle on these issues. I agree with you.
But as Fred said, you think at some point, especially now with these, you know, these recent discoveries, that at some point it would just be like, well, we can't have Canadians of any background not have access to clean water, decent living conditions. You know, we think of ourselves as the greatest country in the world, but, you know, this is, you know, the old weakest link thing. This is our weakest link. Yeah. And I find it fascinating, as does Fred, and I think a lot of people now, that we just can't seem to figure this out. But so do you, not to be political, but do you have some hope that we'll now get around to finally fixing this shit?
I hope so. Like, you know, and I think it's important to state that there are many First Nations communities that are doing so well. They are producing bright, educated kids. They are incredibly entrepreneurial. They have huge assets for their communities and businesses that are flourishing. So we shouldn't think of Indigenous as a monoculture. I want to make that point.
That's fair.
That's perpetuating stigma that shouldn't exist. But there are communities that are really struggling, especially in northern Manitoba and northern Ontario. And, you know, yeah, I this whole, you know, what happened with the kids, that was all documented in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report. It's actually not new. And but of course, our eye has turned on it again with the additional information about the 215 in Kamloops. But all of that's been documented by the TRC. And then, you know, at the time we grieved about it as a society, and then we move on to the next thing to grieve about, I guess. What it requires, I believe, gentlemen, is real laser-like focus by a government working with the First Nations, Indigenous communities, and just getting to problem solving. We can grieve, we can have our performances as people and right. have the wonderful recitation of Indigenous history on Canada Day celebrations. Mm-hmm. You actually have to get stuff done.
Right.
You have to work on.
And again, this may be an unfair question, but I'll ask it again. I'm from your perspective as a guy in the room. Listen, if the water supply in Toronto was tainted today, it would be fixed tomorrow. Seriously, drinking water, why can't Trudeau or be at Harper say, okay, I want this crew of engineers up there tomorrow?
Yeah, to fix that. Yeah.
In the country,
it's got to be indigenous engineers, Fred.
Okay. Well, whatever.
But the country with the most fresh water in the world.
Yeah. But I just thought of something, Fred.
What that was my mind.
Ralph Ben-Murgy was on the show last week, and we've been talking about this issue, Tony. I'm sure you have on your podcast as well. But what Ralph said that stuck, and I think is true, is that no government was ever not elected by ignoring Indigenous affairs. Because to the average Canadian, it's not top of mind. If you're not, listen, I grew up, I told Freddie, I grew up in Moose Jaw and the Regina area, huge Indigenous population, and I was around it my whole life. But if you're not, it's pretty much out there somewhere and not really affecting us.
Yeah, you know, I had seven reserves in my riding in Perry Sound Muskoka and spent a lot of my time with them. And some of it was appreciated, some of it wasn't, and I get that. Oh, as a politician, sometimes people don't think you have the best of intentions, but it does need that focus. And I had a Mohawk pastor on my podcast a couple of weeks ago, a guy named Barry Miracle, and you know, there are voices in the Indigenous community. They want the truth, but they also want reconciliation, and reconciliation means loving. You know, us loving Indigenous people and Indigenous people loving us. It is a two-way street.
Right. And it's interesting what you said about the engineers. They have to be Indigenous engineers. I mean, there's a whole other aspect, too. I know there's bewildering pushback from that side, too. But it just adds to the frustration of things not being done.
Well, you don't want to be, you know, the buzzword being colonialism. You don't want to be colonialist. You don't want to be settler-like. So you and me, Freddie, if we're engineers, hi, we're white guys. We're here to solve your water problem.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't work.
Well, okay. But somewhere in all this labyrinth, there has to be a way for somebody to solve that problem. Tony, we're kind of running up against it. We have Dan's news. We have another guest. No, normally you're on longer. I want everyone to know that this Another Thing podcast is taking off. I see... on Twitter, I get a lot of what Tony's doing in terms of guests. It's always interesting. Mr. Clement is one of those guys that has a perspective most of us will never have, having been the assistant to the regional manager of this country. So, Tony, thank you very much. Is there anything else you want to just mention? Any upcoming guests? Because it's going to be a whole other month before we... And by the way, I don't want to ask because I know it's a bit weird, but can I borrow your boat? Is there any way I could do that?
I only have a kayak. My
friend. Oh, kayak. Oh, I'm sorry,
man. You don't have a motorboat.
No, no.
Come on.
No, I borrow my in-laws' motorboat.
Right? Can I borrow their motorboat? Because I'll tell you, that whole kayaking is overblown.
Howard, did you paddle for you, maybe, Howard.
Okay.
Did you get your boating license, Howard?
Yeah, I have a boating license.
Oh, okay.
Had it for years.
Well. That's first step. Okay.
No, I've got it. I'm a boater.
Perfect.
Anyways, T, thank you very much, mister. We certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, Tone. See you next month.
Tony Clement, everyone, the Gigs Guy, guest of the day. Freddie P, do you have Gigs Guy in front of you? Can you do that for him?
Yes, I had the Chambers plan. Here we are.
But Gigs Guy, I'm going to do Chamber plan later.
All right.
And where's Dan, for crying out loud? Look at the size of the speakers so behind him.
Those are my Martin Logan speakers.
Yeah, that's excessive.
They're standing by.
Those speakers are your Wang of speakers.
I thought you were shipping those over to Darren.
I am. I just haven't. He's not at his cottage.
Ready?
Yet,
so do
I
you like wait. That? Those speakers are Dan's Wang in speakers. I'll say it again.
I didn't catch it. I love it.
I love it. I know you didn't catch it because you didn't laugh. Okay. But we're going to do Gigs Guy and then Dan and then Chamber Plan and it's all going to be fine. All right. There we go, Dan. Just stand by, Dan, please.
Standing by, yeah.
Thank you.
Are you dreaming about your post-lockdown vacation? If you're as eager as the rest of us to get out and travel sometime this summer, be sure to add the Gigs Guy app to your list of travel accessories. The Gigs Guy app
provides worldwide mobile data coverage in over 190 countries with newly updated prices, including a data plan for Canada. It's the easiest, most affordable, and convenient way to stay connected internationally. Whether you're pulling up directions, looking for the coolest restaurant or bar, doesn't that sound great? Mm. Or sharing your post-COVID pics on Instagram, you'll want access to data when traveling. All GigSky data plans are prepaid with no contracts or recurring fees. Listen, you get what you pay for, and that's what you're looking for. Your service is never throttled. You know how aggravating that can be. Download the GigSky app today and enter code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan, or visit GigSky.com for more information. Golfing yesterday afterwards, we sat on a patio and had a beer. What a wonderful experience that was. It was just nice.
Yeah.
Other golfers sitting around, enjoying a beer, the sunshine. It was like, man, I've missed this.
Not
as
me.
Simple as
not
that
me.
Is.
Not gonna mean. Not me. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Missed the pandemic where you didn't have to talk to people.
Oh, Howie.
Gander Ram, the anchorman, comes, as for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dander Ram, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from a giant speaker warehouse. Oh, there's his son popping up from behind the speakers. Live from another lake in another part of Peterborough, here's Dan Duran.
Today is National Fudge Day. To celebrate, eat fudge.
Mm.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say pack fudge, but that's just me.
Howie.
Come on now. Come on now. All right. What is on? What else
there
is going
opening
on?
There for you.
Yeah.
Okay, catching up, Biden is wrapping up his grown-up is running the U.S. again tour by meeting Trump's pal Putin. That's happening as we speak.
Yeah, I'm going to do like a five-hour meeting or something with him.
Yeah, 5 hours. What are they going to talk about? Oh, I don't know.
maybe Biden's going to say, hey, did you put your shit tag out?
Yeah, my poop's better than yours. The ISS is rolling out new solar panels on the space station today. That's
nice.
Exciting. You can watch that live over at NASA. China's sending humans to their space station on Thursday. So they've decided to open their own little space station, and they got some three guys going up there on Thursday. In the U.S., members of the House Intelligence Committee will receive a classified briefing on UFOs today.
Can't wait.
All right.
Yeah.
Here's another book I'll never buy.
Hold on a second. I sense a transition coming.
Okay.
Hold on. And now with a transition to a different story, here's Dan Duran.
Now that we've done the headline thing, here's a book I'll never buy. Jared Kushner has signed a deal to publish his take on his shadow work as part of Trump's brain, according to the publisher. And this is a quote. His book will be the definitive, thorough recounting of the administration and the truth about what happened behind closed doors.
Yeah, I can't wait for that truth.
I don't know. He goes for shopping for truth. I wonder which truth should he buy?
You know, it's funny because every day I've been hearing or reading about some other cockamamie way the GOP is now reframing, if you will, the January 6th incident. You know, they've gone from, the day after saying, you know, Trump should be censured, etc. Now they're saying, the latest is Ron Non Johnson is saying that it was actually the FBI. The FBI is the one that they put it. They did that. The FBI created this, you know, insurrection to make Trump look bad or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very plausible.
Sure, why not? The FBI, that's what they
not?
Do. Why not?
If all the other ones didn't stick, let's try this one out.
If you're not a whack job, and again, no matter whether you're a Republican or Democrat, how can you not be like thoroughly pissed at those guys for trying to change that?
Yeah.
You know, the narrative, you mean?
Well, yeah.
The narrative, what we saw, what happened.
You know, so
because I'm thinking you don't care about your country. It doesn't come first.
When that guy said it was nothing more than a few tourists and they barely got out of hand, I keep thinking of that scene
Yeah.
And it's one of the most disturbing things, if you remember it, where they were beating the policeman with the flag, and that cop was beaten to death.
Mm-hmm.
To death. Hundreds of people were injured. Hundreds of people
were shot to death.
And hundreds of people have been charged. And yet this politician and them of their ilk, that those of this, you know, these people are trying to make it seem like it wasn't that big a deal. I don't know. I find it disturbing.
There's no number on insurrection either. It's not like, oh, it was 10 people, so it's not an insurrection.
No, I know.
Oh, it was 15 people. Now it is. No, we saw what happened. And the thing is, just think timing. Just think if the timing had been a little bit different and they got in the chamber.
That's right.
With the politicians, Mike Pence in particular, still there, what could have happened? And how that could have snowballed a frenzy of more people becoming involved, which probably would have happened.
And think, if you will, that was still when Donald Trump, that happened on a, I can't remember, was it Wednesday or Thursday, but on the Monday of that week, Donald Trump had a meeting with Mike Pence. And remember, we had this discussion about how stupid the fucking guy was, because he thought there was an opportunity for Mike Pence to overturn the certification process, which there was not. But imagine, those people went there to stop the certification process. That was basically the motivation. And yet here we are 5 and a bit months later, and there's a bunch of grown men and women, nut jobs, who are having conversations about how it was the FBI and how it was Antifa and it wasn't Trump. So, yeah, it's a
what they've learned, Howard, is that they've watched Trump do the Trumpy things and, you know, breaking all the norms and, you know, and learn that the truth just doesn't matter. You can make up your own story, and there's a percentage of people.
Oh, Dan just kind of froze on us there.
Election doesn't exist in.
Yeah, I'm sorry, buddy, your audio for the last, Dan, I'm sorry, the last 18 or 20 seconds of you just kind of froze up. What were you saying?
I was just saying that all the things that the Trumpian people, or the conservatives in the States, have learned from Trump is it's okay to lie.
Right.
And, you know, a certain percentage of people will believe you, and it just, the truth doesn't matter anymore. Well, you got some narrative you want to
try. It's what Fred just said. We all saw it, but now even people that saw it have an alternate take on it, which is that it really wasn't that bad and it didn't happen. It was some and they were actually walking around going, yeah, it's all the media, it's all, you know, blown out of proportion. Anyway,
well, it's become political.
Well, you become somewhat, political
somewhat like vaccines in Ontario. It's yesterday I hear a couple of news stories, all these people complaining about not being able to get their vaccine. And believe me, I know I'm privileged, and for whatever reason or where I live or who I don't know. I don't know one person that's had a problem getting vaccine. Not one.
Yeah, I know a couple.
Oh, do you?
Okay. Yeah, I know a couple, yeah.
But there are news stories of like big-time complaints about, oh, I can't get this vaccination and this system sucks and everything, and I'm... And then again, I'm trying to measure it, thinking, I don't know anybody that's had a problem. I haven't. My wife hasn't. My friends haven't. Is this political? You can't help but think that.
Well, I know a few people that have. Again, I'm in the city here. And I will say, I think the government, there's been a bit of a failure in terms of a one place to go. Because if it wasn't for vaccine hunters, that was created.
Right.
A lot of people wouldn't have vaccines. It seems that there was a breakdown in terms of go here, enter your age and name, and this is when you'll get your vaccine. But we have to cut this a bit short, because we have another person coming up here in a moment or two. I don't want to get too far away. Dan Duran's news today brought to you by the Chamber Plan. Fred, the Chamber Plan has been helping those of us who have insurance needs for some time now.
That's right. Because it's Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Been around 30 years. 40 years rather, 30,000 Canadian businesses are part of it. We've told you about it over the past several months. If you have a small business and you've thought about a benefits package for your people, this is the way to go. Go to chamberplan.ca, get a free quote. They'll lay it all out. They'll give you several options. You can decide what you want, again, for your people. All sorts of coverages. I mean, from the basics of, prescriptions and dental to all sorts of other products under the umbrella. Take the time, have a look. It will work for you. Again, it's very stable. Even the premiums over the past several years for small business, they hold the line because collectively it's like a huge corporation is buying into this thing. And it makes sense. Again, it's a smart thing to do for your people. Chamberplan.ca. Get a free quote today.
No, don't go for a second, Dan. Before you leave, Dan. Hey, yeah. Tim, just hang on one second. I want to see something. Dan, for some perspective, because I know, Fred and I both know how big those speakers are because we've seen them in person. But can you just do this? Can you back up from your camera and just go back and stand just for some perspective as to the size? Okay, keep going. Move to your right. Keep going. Okay, so there you go. No, back up. There you go. They're literally...
Sometimes shoulders.
Yeah, they're like shoulder height.
Jesus Christ.
They're what? 6 feet?
I'm 6 feet.
Oh, you're 6 feet. Oh, are you?
6 foot one. So
oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Well. Thank you, Dan.
There's
Colton. Hi, Colton.
Hey, Colton.
Look at that boy.
He's off to work.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
All right.
And we're off right now. We're off to Florence, Italy for our weekly update on what's happening. Here's a boy that grew up on the prairie and has done well. Are you having a drink?
It's icy. Not even the Long Island variety. Just plain old iced tea.
Look at you. Look at that glass. You didn't have glasses like that when you grew up on... Brown Street or whatever.
Styrofoam cups.
That's a boy.
I thought that was a white wine and you were enjoying some nice Italian cheese and baguette and
we're pushing 40 degrees here today, so I'm pounding back the iced tea.
You know, it's very similar to summer in Ontario. You wait all year for the great weather, and sometimes the great weather comes, it's like, it's too good. You know, Fred's often mentioned, because he's been to Italy, I think you've been there a couple times, right, Fred?
Twice, yes. Love it.
And we've talked about how lifestyles are so much different in some European countries. It's just a different pace to the day. And as a Canadian, I mean, I know you've lived in the States, but you've lived in Florence for 8 years. Do you feel like now you've adapted to more of an Italian lifestyle, like an afternoon, you know, you have some wine, maybe some cheese, and make love, that type of thing, you know? I don't
know. Well, yeah, all but for that last part.
All right.
But I got to say, it's taken me all of these 8 years to kind of get into the local rhythm. And now I've finally learned to appreciate it. We just come from this culture of instant gratification back in North America, and things just work a little bit different here, which is part of the charm. But it does make for, some frustrating times when you're just trying to get some of the basic things of life out of the way so you can, get on with the more enjoyable things. And sometimes, those basics take a lot more time than what we're used to. But I've slowly grown into that pace of life. So very much enjoying it.
We got a buddy in France and I was talking to him last week. And he was telling me he had a car shipped over to France.
Yeah.
And he tried to get it licensed in France.
Yeah.
It's going to be cheaper and easier to ship it home and sell it.
Yeah. That's what he was telling us. Yeah. It's crazy.
I doubt it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I once shipped a Jeep over. Mm-hmm. It was for business. And it was interesting because when I told the dealer, it was on the West Coast, it was in Vancouver. And I told the dealer that I was buying this Jeep specifically to have it shipped over to Europe. And he said, I didn't hear that. And I said, why? And he said, because I absolutely can't sell it to you if I know that that's what you're doing. And I said, why? And he said, because they go for double the price over in Europe. And so they want to, you know, regulate the flow of them. And he said, of course, we can't, you know, legally stop you from doing it. But me as a dealer, I could actually lose my license if I'm selling it to you knowing you're going to ship it to Europe. But the end of the story was, is that it lasted here for about it wasn't in Italy. It was another part of Europe, but it lasted for a day and a half before it got stolen.
What?
That was it. So,
That's so ridiculous.
So the take home lesson is, don't ship Jeeps over to Europe.
Well, the nice thing is, if that happened to you now, you'd be able to look at your health gauge watch like I can and see what that did to your blood pressure. I got to tell you, very good news for you. Lots of people are inquiring. I've had several emails and messages in the last couple of weeks about getting the watch. And then you and I was going to send you a note because I was hoping you and I could get together on Friday and have a little chat about some mechanics of this, because people have been asking specifically when we're going to be able to have a promo code. In the meantime, both Freddie and I, you know, a lot of times we get some client stuff and we're like, oh, well, sure, we'll try that. But both of us have been, we talk about it all the time. We start off this morning by talking about how many steps we did yesterday. I never thought I'd be that guy because I've never had a watch like this. I've never had a Fitbit or any of those things. But it is interesting once you have it, how you start to pay attention to it. Did you notice that when you first started putting it on? Because you're very active.
Absolutely. You know, beyond a doubt. And, you know, to the point now where because I'm kind of a watch guy. I've got quite a collection. And I don't wear other jewelry, but I do love my watches. But you know what? In the last several months, I haven't had one of my single expensive watches on. All I've got on is this.
Oh, you got the new one too now.
I do. It finally arrived in the mail. So I'm in the club, boys.
Attaboy. Yeah, it's good.
You know, I've noticed this whole 10,000 step a day thing to me just seems about a bit outrageous. I mean, I have noticed, though, since I've had this watch, if I can peel off 5,000 a day, I can sort of hold my line on weight.
Yeah.
Because when I get up in the morning and weigh myself, if I'm up 2 or 4 tenths of a pound or whatever it is, you know, if you're a bit sloppy with what you're eating the day before, I have noticed if I can hit around 5,000, I can hold the line on my weight. So it's invaluable from that standpoint.
It absolutely is. And I got to tell you, just looking at mine now, I haven't gone out for any sort of exercise today, and I'm at 8,200 steps.
Yeah.
And that's just the difference in the European lifestyle. That's just, you know, going out to buy the milk and to take the garbage out and to do blah, blah, blah. And you just, you know, you accumulate the steps without even thinking about it. And then, you know, this afternoon I'll go for my hour run and that'll be another 10,000 steps.
Wow.
But yeah, it's not about the steps per se. What it is that you start aggregating all this data together, and it is the steps, but it's all the other analytics that it's providing to you as well, and you'll start to see a pattern forming in relation to your life. And so, you know, when I go for 3 or 4 days and I've, you know, been hyper stressed because of work or whatever, and I go back and I check what my numbers looked like over those days, I'll see that, you know, the blood pressure might have been a little bit elevated, the heart rate was a little faster than usual, the sleep pattern was off, and so on and so forth. And so when you start tagging, you know, those, you know, hard, cold numbers.
Right, the key indicators.
Get aggregated to your real life. And you see, man, there's direct correlation. I am affecting my health by what I do each and every day. And so it starts to change your mindset. And you start to say, you know what, it's time for me to take that afternoon break and, you know, get into the long idle or whatever it is, you know. And you will see that there's this, you know, very immediate, and it becomes dramatic impact on the analytics, on the numbers, by, you know, your behavioral change. changes. Well, you know, so that's the good thing.
The fact that it's called the health gauge now makes so much more sense, because in real time, you can gauge your health and the effects that your lifestyle is having on it. You know, because I guess this is about my third or our third week with it, Freddie, or something like that. But I've become so used to checking out my temperature, checking out my blood pressure. Not as obsessively as I thought I would, but the two key ones that I check a lot are steps and sleep. Sure. Because I've had this idea that I don't get as much sleep as I thought. Like, you know, I've never been a great sleeper, but I look at it and it turns out that on most days I'm getting actually more sleep than I thought I was.
Oh, good for you.
Absolutely. And I can tell on the weekends when I've had a little bit more sleep, I see what that does to my blood pressure for the day, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to gauge your health, healthgauge.com, it's a monitoring system that is going to make you healthier ultimately and give you indicators to share with people that you know, fitness, nutrition, and your doctors.
Mm-hmm. You're a runner, Tim. What the one that I have found interesting too, because I've always got a mind to my heart because of the family history, is resting heart rate.
Yes.
I've been as 62. What would somebody like you be that runs?
When I wake up in the morning, it's in the low to mid 40s, 42, 45.
Nice. That's hardly alive. My goodness. Yeah.
I'll get on the treadmill and, you know, in days gone by, nowadays I don't need it anymore, but days gone by, I would get on the treadmill and, getting my heart rate up to about 110, 120, which is my warm-up rate before I get on the squash court. And it would take me like a half an hour to get it up there. Crazy.
Oh, it's too bad. Yeah.
You know,
Fred and I yell about the Trump, our heart rate spikes.
You talk about the lifestyle too. That's one thing I noticed in Italy in particular, just watching the people day to day.
Yeah.
They just seem calmer, more relaxed, more into the moment. It's wonderful. Yeah. And over there, like, you don't go buy a week's worth of groceries either, right? Like, every day
you buy
fresh, and it's wonderful.
You're absolutely right, Fred. Yeah. You know, we made that mistake when we first moved over here, where we'd go out and buy a week's worth of food. Mm. And after the third day, everything's starting to rot
because it's fresh.
All vine ripened. It's ready to eat now. And I remember, you know, going to the market and I was buying peaches and the salesman asked me, well, do you want to eat them today or tomorrow? Because if you want them today, I'll give you these ones. If it's tomorrow, these ones.
Wow.
And I said to him, well, what if I want them next week? And he said, well, come back next week.
That's great.
Hey, you ain't getting that service.
No, that's right. Sobeys are like, when you buy them at Sobeys, they're like, eat it now, eat it in 3 weeks. It doesn't matter. all right, Timmy, we will check in with you soon and I'll get you a note. Hopefully we can grab a bit of time on Friday or sometime next week. Healthgauge.com. It is really something else. It's not a very expensive item. Go check it out on the website. And now you can see it in real time. All of us are checking. My heart rate's at 85. What's yours? What's yours at, Timmy?
Oh, I haven't looked at it here now. I'm sure I'm excited because, well, I'm with you boys.
Sure.
Give me a minute.
What's yours, Fred?
73.
Wow, that's good. Mm-hmm.
Well, they say between 70 and 100 is normal.
Yeah, that's absolutely normal.
Yeah. Okay.
No question. It's coming. Mine is 59.
That's right. So the two of us are excited, and you're just chilling there in Italy.
Howie, what would you rather have, a standing heart rate or a resting heart rate of 59 or shoot a 59?
Oh, 59 easily. All right, Timmy, talk to you soon, my brother.
All right.
There you go.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Healthgauge.com. Before we go today, don't you forget that the government of Ontario wants you to know that every day more and more people are getting their vaccines, their COVID-19. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. Every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit ontario.ca. Book vaccine. Paid for by the government of Ontario. So I don't know if you noticed, but we got no Phil. Phil just had to go to work.
The surge probably arrived.
Oh yeah. Well, I think he's only with us now until about 8:30. So we won't have him at the end of the show again for a while. That's all right. So I think that's it. What are you going to go golfing again today?
No. I think I may wander up north.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Is the missus coming with you this time, or are you going to be out there by yourself aggravating?
No, she's not. She's got to stick around and get her shot on Friday, and then she's heading up.
Double vaxxed.
I plan on an extended stay longer than she cares, so she wants her own car up there.
Nice. All right, well, we'll see you all tomorrow. The program brought to you by the Chamber Plan, Gig Sky, Red Light Holland, Government of Ontario, the Retirement Sherpa, Health Gauge, and is cobbled together each and every day in a haphazard fashion. All right. Have a nice day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.